Welcome to This Is Your Life with Michael Hyatt, where our goal is to help you win at work and succeed at life. My name is Stu McLaren, and I am filling in for the wonderful Michelle Cachette, who is finishing her battle with cancer. The good news is she's going to be back soon, and we are very happy for that, for her and for everyone. And in the meantime, though, you're stuck with me. And Michael, I'm glad to be here in studio with you. We're going to be talking about something today that I know is meaningful to you.
It is. We're going to be talking about how a small shift in your vocabulary can make a big difference in your attitude. And this was an insight that had a huge impact on me.
Yeah, and I want to talk to you about that because on your blog, you wrote, "This past year, I have noticed how my vocabulary impacts my attitude. Words have power. They impact others, of course, but they can also have an impact on us." And this is fascinating because we always think about how our words as bloggers, podcasters, platform builders, leaders, they influence others.
Yeah.
But rarely do we think about how the words that we're using actually influence our own behavior and attitude.
Yeah, they often betray our thinking. You know, out of the abundance of a man's heart, his mouth speaks. You know, we've all heard that. It's an old biblical phrase. But sometimes those words actually shape our reality. That's one of the purposes of words, is they give us a definition to reality and how to talk about reality. But if we're not careful, they can shape our reality in a negative way if we're not careful.
And I almost think of it almost like a compounding effect, you know?
Yeah.
The more you use certain words, the more that gets ingrained into your subconscious and your well-being, and the opposite is true.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you how this came about, how this insight came about. So I'm on an airplane. Hmm. I'm on my way to San Jose. So I have to fly from Nashville to San Jose to a speaking engagement. That's clear across the country.
Yep.
You know, it's about a three-hour flight. It's going to be long. And I'm talking to a friend of mine on the phone, and he said, "So what are you doing?" And I said, "Well, I have to go to San Jose and speak at this certain function." I told him what the function was. So he said, "Oh, that's cool." You know, so we talked for a little bit. And I hung up the phone, and I thought to myself, wait a second. Hmm. I have to?
Right.
Nobody's holding a gun to my head. This is an engagement I willingly accepted. People I know would kill for the opportunity to be doing what I'm doing, to go and speak, in this case, thousands of people at this convention. And it was really the dream that I had had, you know, 5 or 6 years before that, to do this full time. I didn't have to do this.
Right.
I get to do this.
Yeah.
And so it just was a subtle thing, just a shift of one word. Mm. But for me to say, I get to go to San Jose and speak to this convention, changed everything. It changed my attitude.
Changed it from a burden to an opportunity.
That's right. One of those, I have to, is the language of burden or duty.
Yep.
And get to is the language of privilege. And it's the difference between being grateful for something and kind of resenting it.
Right.
You know?
Well, I want to bring this down to a very practical level for everybody listening. And I know you have 8 examples of privileges that our vocabulary would otherwise suggest are burdens. And I think the more we are aware of these, the better we can begin shaping our own vocabulary to have a positive outcome rather than the negative. So let's dive into this. What's
okay.
the first privilege that we often look at as a burden?
Well, taking care of our health. Mm. You know, we often think of that as a burden, something that we have to do. And because of that, it just drains our energy. We don't lean into it like we should. We don't embrace it like we could. But give you an example. I got up this morning at 5 a.m., which is my typical time. Actually, it's about 5:10, but I'm close to 5. And I went to the gym at 7 a.m. Now, at about 6:30, when I'm beginning to prepare and leave, I could have said to Gail, I have to go to the gym.
Right.
But instead, I get to go to the gym. Hmm. You know, thank God I have my health.
Yep.
Thank God I can still work out. You know, I have a wonderful gym to work in. It was raining this morning. I didn't have to go outside and run. Yeah. I could work out in a beautiful facility. Or think about this, and I know you do a lot of work in Africa, and I've been to Ethiopia, haven't traveled extensively. But I have to go to the doctor versus I get to go to the doctor. I mean, how many people in Kenya, where you work, or South Africa, where your son is from, would they just kill almost for the privilege of being able to go to a doctor?
It's an opportunity, and we see it. with health, you know, we see it with education, you know, and you really, these things really come to the front of your mind when you are in a situation like when we, you know, are working in Africa and you see what opportunities those really are. And yeah, the health is a very important thing. I mean, a lot of people in Africa suffer from challenges that we here in Western civilization or in first world countries, we don't even blink an eye at.
Yeah.
But there, because they can't get treated, it becomes a magnified problem and it just compounds itself.
Well, and sometimes when we complain about these issues, somebody will say to us, well, those are first world problems because, you know, you say to you, well, I have to go shopping.
Yeah.
You know, something related to our health. I have to go shopping. Well, people in the third world, I get to go shopping?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I get to go to a place where they actually have refrigeration and where they have food and where I don't have to walk 5 miles to get clean water and bring it back on my back.
I remember this clip from Louis C.K. when he talks about just being on a plane and how people sometimes view that as a burden. But what he does is he puts it in perspective and takes a step back and says, hang on a minute, let's just take a second and think about what's actually happening here. And it's a great clip because he talks about all the obvious things that we just take for granted.
Yeah.
And it does. It really shifts your mind to the point where you think, man, this is pretty incredible. Like what we have, the opportunities that we have, especially when you talk about taking care of your health, this is the most important element of our lives. If we don't take care of this one thing, we can't do anything else.
No, that's exactly right. Yep. Absolutely.
Okay, so taking care of our health is the first example of a privilege that sometimes we accidentally or unintentionally look at as a burden. What's the second example of a privilege?
Okay, this is going to hit close to home, but merely going to work or to school if you're a student. But, you know, well, I have to go to work. How many people do you know that are unemployed right now?
Yeah.
That would do anything if they could have a job, not your job, but just any job where they could put food on the table, where they could take care of their family, where they could look in the mirror and say, you know, I'm making a contribution.
Yeah.
And yet when you think about, for most of us, you know, we're not working in a salt mine. Mm. You know, we're not working in a labor camp. We get to go to work usually in a place that's got a pretty good environment where people are civil, where we're making money.
Yep.
And it may not be the money we'd like to make. It may not be the job we ultimately want, but we get to go to work. Today we have a job. And to be thankful for that. And again, one is the language of burden and duty. One is the language of privilege. Or going to school, same thing. And most of your work in Kenya is in schools.
Yeah.
Talk about that a little bit, about how we take education for granted, and yet what a privilege it is to the Kenyans.
Well, I'll just give you one small example. Okay. So when we go over to Kenya to open up a new school for our charity, one of the things that we like to do is have some type of a celebration. You know, we have a traditional school opening celebration, but we like to do something with the kids itself. Hmm. And we thought long and hard about this. And one of the things that we started doing the last few years is we take a whole bunch of educational supplies, pencils, pens, paper, crayons.
Just kind of the basics.
Yeah. And what is one of the things that just lights me up is going into a classroom and giving out a class set of all these to the kids. So they have their own little pencil case. They have their own pencils, pens.
Each kid. Okay.
Each kid has their own little pencil case. And the reactions that you get from those kids, because they cannot believe that they have their own pencil and they've got their own pen. And especially crayons and pencil crayons. And it is amazing. I'll never forget we have this on video. There was one little boy, he was sitting down and he thought at first he just got a pencil case. And he was like, he's excited about that. But then when he opened it up and he realized that there was actually stuff in there, he got up out of his seat and started doing this like crazy dance. It was hilarious. But it really hit home to me, like, wow, like again, this is an educational component. Like it's pencils and pens, things that we take for granted. But it's the same, that trickles down. Those kids are so excited to be able to go to school. It's a privilege for them and their families. And their families try to do everything that they can mm-hmm. to be able to send their kids to school.
They really sacrifice, don't they?
Really sacrifice.
Yeah.
And it really does put in perspective the value of education and work, because the same situation, a lot of those families, they don't have work. And so to be able to have consistent work is a real privilege.
We sponsor some kids through World Vision. And one of the kids just graduated from high school, and he was looking at the opportunity to go to college, but he didn't have the money.
Hmm.
And so he wrote us a letter, and always very grateful. We get all this personal correspondence from him, and he really keeps up with us. And he said, well, and he just assumed he wouldn't be able to go because, I get this, it was going to cost $1,500 a year.
Hmm.
That was for everything.
Wow.
That was room, board, education, and everything. But he would do anything to get that.
Yeah.
And so Gail and I thought about it, prayed about it. We decided we were going to fund that.
Hmm.
And, I mean, it made a huge difference for him.
Yeah.
You know, and he gets to go, you know,
and
he doesn't
have
to.
What I would love to emphasize, too, is the trickle-down effect that has.
Yeah.
You know, similar story. The first time we ever went to Africa, we went to Ghana. And we met a young teenager. His name was William, King William. And to make a
You have video of this, right?
I have pictures of him.
Okay, maybe that was it. I've seen it.
Yeah. And I'll never forget the story or the time that we first met him. But to make a long story short, he was 14 years old and he wasn't going to school because he was working, making bracelets for tourists. And he was funding the cost to send his younger brothers and sisters to school. And I asked him, I said, well, you know, would you like to go to school? Do you like school? And he just lit up, like his eyes just popped out. He's like, I love school. And the crazy thing was he reached into his backpack and pulled out his old report card, his most recent report card. And I thought to myself, I'm like, man, this has got to be like the most craziest thing. I've never known any kid to be carrying around their report card. But he was proud and he showed me and he had good grades and everything. And I asked him, I said, well, how much does it cost for you to go to school? And for him, he was going to a high school at the time, and it was essentially $40 a semester. So I went back to my wife, Amy, and I said, hey, listen, I would love to, you know, support William. I said, would you be open to it? And she said, yeah, of course. Like, she's a teacher, so she loves education. Mm-hmm. That's the whole reason, you know, we're building schools. And so we went back, and I said to him, I said, okay, William, here's the money for the bracelets that we just bought from you. I said, but here's $40 extra. And I don't want you spending this on food. I don't want you spending this on water. This is not for anybody else because that's their natural reaction. You know, what's their most immediate need? That's where they want to spend the money. I said, but this is for your education. I said, and the deal is if you maintain an A average and you send us a copy of your report card, we'll continue to pay each semester for you. Now, I didn't think I'd ever hear from him again. But sure enough, about 5 months later, because we gave him our address, we got a picture, a little brown parcel in the mail. And I was at home working and Amy was at school. And she called at lunchtime and I said, babes, we've got this like brown parcel from Ghana. And she said, well, open it. So open it up. And there's a picture of King William with his backpack on. He was like all proud. And then there was his actual report card. Now, we didn't want him to send us his actual report card. We just wanted a copy. But you know, no, sure enough, there was his actual report card. And he had maintained his A average. And we called his school and we set up a situation where we could fund him on a regular basis. He's since now graduated from high school and he started his own business and he's employed like all of his family, you know, in that business. And it's just, it's just a reminder of how amazing education can be for those people, for us, you know, and I think we take it for granted. But when you have examples like the person you're funding, that's going to have a ripple effect in his life and his family's life, and it'll impact so many people for generations to come.
Well, and the bottom line of this is if you're a student and you're listening to this podcast and you're thinking to yourself, I have to go to school today, we want you to make a shift.
Yeah.
And recognize the privilege that you have, that you get to go to school, that you get to have your education paid for. You know, even if you have to have a student loan, at least you live someplace where that's even possible and makes your education possible.
Amazing. Okay, I love talking about this stuff. So we're talking about examples of privileges that our vocabulary would sometimes suggest are burdens. We talked about taking care of our health. We talked about going to work or to school. What's another one?
Another one is attending church and social functions.
Hmm.
You know, I love my church. I've been a member of the same church for about 30 years. But there are times, you know, when I think to myself, I'm just being honest here. You get up on a Sunday morning and I think, you know, it'd be awesome to just stay in my pajamas and my bathrobe and go out and get the paper and just
easier just to relax.
Kick back.
Yeah.
But then I recognize that there are places where people don't get to go to church, or they don't have a church that they love, and they don't have people in that church that they love. Or maybe it's a social function even. It's a community function.
This can often happen, too, if you got a busy schedule and you got appointments booked with friends, like dates booked with friends.
Yeah.
But you're just like, you know, sometimes you can feel, man, I just want to chill tonight.
Well, and it sounded like such a good idea when you booked it,
yeah.
Right? You know, it was far enough out, and you can almost get me to commit to anything if it's far enough out. But then you get right up on it, and like you said, you may be tired, exhausted, you don't have the energy or whatever, and so then you slip into that vocabulary of, I have to do this. You know, I have to go to dinner with Bob and Nancy. Or, you know, I have to go to church. Well, what if that were a privilege?
Mm.
You know, I get to go to church. I get to go to synagogue. I get to have dinner with Bob and Nancy. I get to see Stu today. I get to do this podcast today.
Well, I'm glad you think that's a privilege. Thank you, Mister. But it's true. It's true. And again, it can be a very lonely world if you don't have those opportunities to socialize, to be part of a great church or community.
Yep.
And that really is a great privilege. So taking care of your health, going to work or school, attending church or social functions. What's another example?
Okay, if you're a platform builder,
yep.
If you're a blogger, podcaster, writing posts or building your platform, to live at the time we live in today and have access to the tools that we have access to, the technology we have access to, or just to be literate enough to be able to write, to express yourself, is a great privilege. You know, again, nobody holds a gun to your head and says, you have to write a blog post or you have to record this podcast. Nobody forced me to come into the studio today to do this podcast with you.
Right.
Both of us are here by choice because we recognize it's a privilege. We get to do this today.
And what a privilege it is to have people who want to hear, watch, or read our content.
I know.
And to be able to share that content.
It's crazy.
You know, there was a time when people were not allowed to share
That's right.
their ideas. They weren't allowed to vocalize, you know, what they were thinking. And it really is a major change in time. I mean, my son being born in South Africa, when we were there, I had great conversations with people about what life was like during apartheid and after.
Mm.
And it was amazing to hear. And I talked to people of all different races, age groups, and so forth. And it was amazing to hear the difference that of life and how people had the freedom to talk. After, and what life was like when they didn't have that same freedom before. It really, again, makes you grateful for the privilege of being able to share ideas and write blog posts and create podcasts and all that kind of stuff.
When you think about even the traditional world of book publishing, the world I came out of, you know, it was very difficult to get a book published, to get permission, and today to have access to the internet and through blogging to get into print, so to speak, immediately is incredible. By the way, it reminds me of another story. I had another friend, Kevin, and I remember him saying in casual conversation that he'd gotten this contract for the book and now he had to write the book. And that was the language he usually said, I have to write the book. And it was after I'd had these thoughts about this privilege burden kind of thing, and I just said, Kevin, I said, dude, as long as I've known you, you wanted to write a book.
Yeah.
You finally got a contract from a traditional publisher. You don't have to write this book. You get to write this book. You are living the dream, buddy.
Yeah, this is it.
This is it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So change your vocabulary. And the thing about it is that when we shift our vocabulary like that and it changes our attitude, it gives us a new energy as we approach our work so we can really engage and be productive.
Mm.
Because when you go into something feeling like it's a burden, you know, your shoulders are slouched and you kind of got a frown on your face. I mean, just your whole energy is down.
Yeah.
Then you don't have the energy to do your best work.
And that rubs off on yourself, but it rubs off on other people
it
around
does.
You. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, today we're talking about how our vocabulary impacts our attitude, and we're talking, sharing examples of privileges that our vocabulary sometimes can suggest are burdens. We've talked about four of them, and those so far are taking care of our health, going to work or school. Number three, attending church and social functions. Number four, writing posts or building our platform. We've got more, and we'll be getting to those in just a few minutes. We'll be right back.
If you're like most members of my audience, you're committed to winning at work and succeeding in life. But the truth is, you struggle with finding enough time to do it all. And that's exactly why I wrote my new ebook, Shave 10 Hours Off Your Work Week, 4 proven strategies for creating more margin for the things that matter most. You can't buy Shave 10 Hours Off Your Work Week, but you can get it for free by subscribing to my free email newsletter. My email newsletter notifies you whenever I've posted fresh content to my blog, so you don't always have to visit my blog to stay up to date. To get your free copy of the Shave 10 Hours Off Your Work Week ebook, visit michaelhyatt.com and enter your name and email address into the form on the page. If you're tired of feeling like there's never enough time to get it all done, don't miss your chance to discover how to reclaim the margin you deserve. Sign up at michaelhyatt.com.
And we are back, and we are talking about how a small change in your vocabulary can have a big impact on your attitude. And we've talked about 4 privileges so far, Michael, that often are viewed as burdens: taking care of our health, going to work or school, attending church and social functions, writing posts or building our platform. What's number 5?
Number 5, surprisingly, is paying your bills.
What? Come on now. You look at this as a privilege?
Well, it's a privilege that most of the time we're able to pay our bills.
True.
You know, that we're able to afford the services. You know, I realize, and I've been there before, where I've had debt or I haven't been able to pay my bills, and it's very frustrating. But to be thankful for the bills that we can pay.
Right.
And as we're recording this, I don't know if I should reveal this or not, but as we're recording this, it's April the 15th in the U.S., I guess everywhere in the world, but it's tax day here in the U.S.
Right.
And one of my least favorite bills to pay is to Uncle Sam.
Yeah.
And I wrote him a sizable check this year, and it would be easy for me to be very, very frustrated with that.
Right.
You know, I get frustrated with how wasteful the government is. I get frustrated with how big it is, how inefficient it is, and I could wax political, but I won't. But then I think, you know what? If my tax bill is bigger, it's because my income was more, and I need to be thankful for that.
Yep.
And I live in a wonderful country. I know you feel the same way about Canada, but I'm proud to live in the U.S. I'm proud to be here. I'm proud to pay these taxes.
Yeah.
You know, to support this wonderful country that I live in. And so, again, I don't just have to pay these taxes. Actually, this is probably more coercive than other ones we've talked about, but I get to.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I guess I could choose not to and end up in jail or something else, but I get to pay these bills and I get to pay these taxes.
Well, and you can also look at it from the size of it too. You know, you could pay a smaller bill, but
That's my choice.
Yeah, that's your choice. I mean, you could definitely pay a smaller bill, but that would also probably mean that you are making less.
That's right.
And so it's always a reflection of the opportunity that you really have.
That's right. Yeah.
Very cool. So paying bills is another privilege that is often, our vocabulary often looks at as a burden. What's another one?
Just maintaining our home, our car, or our other possessions.
Now, I got to admit, I just had to get the brakes done on our family vehicle. And my gut reaction was like, man, this was a burden. I was just like, man, this is awful. Like, we just got other work done on the car literally about 6 months ago.
Yeah.
And now another bill's come up. But you're right. It really is a privilege because
it is a privilege.
Look at what that vehicle allows us to do.
Yeah. You live in a country where you can have your own private vehicle. I mean, that's so rare anywhere in the world. But to have your own private vehicle and to be able to keep it in some semblance of working order, you know, is a privilege.
Yeah. Absolutely. And to be able to drive the vehicle, to be able to put gas in the vehicle, to have gas available to put in the vehicle.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, yeah.
There's some countries where you would wait in line until the gas would finally come in so you could fill up your vehicle and hope you don't run out before the next time it's available.
And a lot of people in a lot of countries don't have the opportunity to drive. They don't have the opportunity to own a vehicle.
Walk everywhere.
They got to walk everywhere, and that prevents them from going to a lot of places.
Yep.
Very cool. So maintaining our home, car, or other possessions. What's number 7 on your list?
7 on my list is taking care of our children. Sometimes that can feel like a real burden.
Yeah, especially when the young kids are up every hour in the night. Not that I'm saying I've got experience with that or my wife has experience with that.
But you might.
Yes, but we could be suggesting that.
But again, it's a privilege. You know, children are a gift. Mm. They're a privilege. The fact that we've been entrusted with his stewardship to raise them and to prepare them for their future and for them to leave their mark on the world, we get to do that. We've been entrusted with that. And I think that language, whether we see them as a burden or as a privilege to us as parents, really affects how they view themselves.
Yeah.
And so I think we have to be careful about our language, not only for our sake, but for their sake.
Right.
Because they pick up on that.
Yep.
You know, if we feel like they're a burden, they're going to feel like they're a burden.
I think, too, sometimes this comes, the vocabulary is like the foundation of it. But even just our everyday actions, you know, the kids pick up on those things.
They do.
And how your body language it comes across. But that all stems from the language that we're using.
Yeah.
You know, your body language and how you feel and react, as you said earlier, is greatly influenced by the language that we use.
It is. That's why I got to watch our mouth.
Yes. Okay, so we're talking about privileges that are often our vocabulary often makes it seem to be like a burden. And so far, we've talked about 7 of them: taking care of our health, number 1. Number 2, going to work or school. 3, attending church and social functions. 4, writing posts or building our platform. 5, paying bills. 6, maintaining our home, car, or other possessions. Number 7, taking care of our children. What's your final privilege here?
Spending time with our spouse.
Yes.
You know, we could say, I have to take my wife on a date.
Mm.
Or I have to go with my wife to this, whatever it is, appointment, meeting, function, whatever it is. Or we could say, I get to.
Yep.
You know, this is an opportunity for us to spend time together, to do something that both of us get to do. And I'm going to tell you, nothing will influence your attitude, your love toward your spouse, like the language you use in talking about them.
And this can be very difficult. Like I found male confession time. I found that it can be, when you're in a room full of men, there's often the situation where the conversation slides towards, oh, I've got to get home to my wife, or I,
yeah,
you know,
or worse, you know.
Yeah, it's almost like a burden. But what you're saying is switch that around. And because I one of the things I always say to myself is, I feel so dang lucky because, I mean, to have...
Well, you should feel lucky.
I know.
I've met Amy.
I mean, definitely won the lottery on that one. I mean, it took me 7 years to convince her that I was the man of her dreams. But you know what? At least I was able to, you know, to do that because it's amazing. And I know you feel this way about Gail, but that excitement grows over time.
It does.
The more you remind yourself of the privilege of having somebody so beautiful and wonderful in your life.
And you begin to shift the conversation for everybody else too when you speak well of your spouse in public, when you speak well in your own vocabulary as you're talking about them. I used to work for a man at Thomas Nelson, Sam Moore. And I remember when he would speak about his wife, he would say, she's my favorite thing to see when I get home.
Hmm.
She's the last thing I want to see before I go to sleep. And he would say it with a twinkle in his eye.
Yeah.
And you just know he loved her.
Yeah.
And he'd been married to her. I think he's been married now for almost 60 years.
Wow.
And for him to still be able to say that
is
extraordinary. But again, it goes back to the vocabulary because you and I get to notice or to decide what we're going to verbalize.
Yep.
And he could have seen she has faults. You know, he could have verbalized that, but he didn't. He chose a different vocabulary. He gets to spend time with her.
And what you focus on seems to get magnified, doesn't
it? It does.
Yeah.
Yeah. What you affirm grows.
Yes. And I noticed, too, with kids, it has an even bigger impact in the way that Amy and I treat each other and the way that we talk mm-hmm. about each other, especially when we're not around each other. So if I'm just with the kids, the way I talk about Amy, my wife, greatly impacts my kids and vice versa, you know, so.
Well, I could say this too, you know, of the 5 daughters I have, you know, they all live within 30 minutes of us. They're all great friends, great girls. I have 4 sons-in-law. I'm very blessed. But people often ask, what did you do to raise such amazing daughters?
Mm.
And honestly, Gail and I scratch our head. We weren't that great of parents. What we did was we fiercely loved one another.
Yeah.
You know, and that's about all that we can point to is that we just put one another as our ultimate priority, even over the kids. And we just loved one another in front of them. And that's the only thing I can point to.
Well, I'm going to take a note on that myself and reaffirm what I need to continue to do. And today we're talking about a small change in vocabulary that can have a big impact on our overall attitude. We've talked about, in particular, 8 privileges our vocabulary would suggest are sometimes burdens. Number 1, taking care of our health, going to work or school. 3, attending church and social functions. 4, writing posts or building our platform. 5, paying bills. 6, maintaining our home, car, or other possessions. 7, taking care of our children. And 8, spending time with our spouse. Michael, as we quickly wrap up this episode, can you share with us some practical steps that we can use to speak more positively about the big priorities in our lives?
Yeah, I have 3 quick steps. Number 1, become aware of your vocabulary.
That's probably the most important one.
It's the most important one because awareness precedes change. Mm. Unless you become aware of it, you know, if you want to lose weight, you got to become aware of what you weigh and you got to measure it periodically. Same thing is true with your vocabulary. Just become aware of it. Catch yourself when you start using that language, I have to.
Right.
And just shift it, you know, correct it, auto-correct it in real time to I get to.
Yep. Okay, so that's the first step.
It's the second one, too. Start using get to rather than have to.
Got it.
You know, you kind of initially have to make a real conscious effort to do that, but over time, with a little practice, it becomes second nature.
Gotcha. So step 1, become aware of your vocabulary. Step 2, start using get to rather than have to. What's the third
and number
step?
Number 3 is notice the difference it makes in your attitude.
Yeah.
I promise you it will shift your attitude if you start doing that.
And the attitude of those around you.
Yep.
Absolutely.
You will.
Awesome. Well, if you've enjoyed today's episode, you can get the full show notes and transcript over at Michael's blog at michaelhyatt.com. And if you'd like to watch rather than listen, you can also get the full video on Michael's blog at michaelhyatt.com. In the meantime, we would love for you to jump over to iTunes and just rate the podcast because we want to attract more great people like you. And the way we're going to do that is if you rate the podcast because it raises the visibility of the show. It'll take you 30 seconds and we would be very grateful. Michael, as we wind down here today, any final thoughts?
Yeah, you may have heard it said that small hinges swing big doors.
Yes.
Well, it's very true when it comes to your vocabulary. It seems like a small thing, but it can have a big impact. So practice it.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Michael. And thank you for listening today. Until next time, remember your life, your one and only life, is a gift. Now go make it count.